All right, I just wanted to, again, welcome Robert Feldman. We appreciate him coming out on a regular day for him, a holiday for us, legal holiday for us, to share with us some Divrei Torah on the Yantif coming up. I specifically wanted to thank the sponsors for this year, for the Shiurim throughout the Yantif season this year, the Gladders, the Gladder family, the Saxes, the Rothblatts, Shmuel and Esther Shiawitz, Glenn and Debbie and Alan and Miriam Pfeiffer, Alezecher Nishmas, Tova Chana Bas Shmuel Alevi, and the Shifrin and Gobin families, the Refuah Shlema for Menachem Mendel Ben Peraldina. Without further ado, I want to call us. Thank you again, Rabbi Feldman, and please.
Thank you. Good morning. All of my titles got rejected. I had a few suggestions for a title. Thought we could call it Shofar So Good, or So Close Yet Shofar, or Shofar As I Could See. And they all got rejected, and apparently it was assumed that they were attempts at humor. But it's really addressing the fact that it's hard to label this topic. It's hard to give a title for this particular theme, because you tend to say things like the mitzvah of tkiyah shofar, or the mitzvah of shofar. And either of those a little bit prejudice the discussion, because what we'll focus on, at least initially, is the fact that what is the mitzvah, or is there more than one mitzvah, of shofar, and is tekiah really the relevant focus? All of that is really somewhat of a question. So before you start speaking, it's hard to properly label the subject because there's a lot of ambiguity as to what exactly is the theme. And that's something that we'll try to look at a little bit. And we start looking at it through the eyes of the Rush. The Rush, in his code to Maseches Rosh Hashanah, he quotes a machlokas among the Rishonim, machlokas between Rabbeinu Tam and the Bahag, and he gets involved as well, and others do, as to what is the proper bracha for this mysterious mitzvah of shofar, and not so much the question of whether the bracha should have the word al or le, that's subject to other factors, but the question that's relevant there is what's the verb? What verb should be, excuse me, what verb should be used in the bracha for shofar? Is it litkoa, or al tkiyah shofar, or is it al shmias shofar, or lishmoa kol shofar? And as the Rush explains, the machlokas seems to be a fundamental question as to what indeed is the mitzvah of shofar. Is the mitzvah to blow the shofar? Which maybe would have been our guess. That seems to be the most prominent activity done with the shofar. Or should we perhaps assert that maybe the mitzvah really isn't in the tekiah, but the mitzvah is the shmia itself. The mitzvah is hearing the shofar, which actually seems to be the dominant view. This is the view that the Rambam adopts in his tshuvas, and that emerges from the way the Rambam formulates the language in the Mishneh Torah, and the way many others followed in that path. One gets the sense that really it's shmias kol shofar that seems to have emerged as the primary, the dominant mitzvah of the shofar. So what I'd like to focus on to begin with, to understand that a little bit, is, so what about tekiah? Tekiah does seem to be a pretty major part. We need a qualified person in order to perform that act of tekiah, and somebody who has to practice and be put under great pressure. So what is the role of the Baal Tekiah? Is he really insignificant because he's just blowing the shofar and that doesn't really matter? The mitzvah is the tekiah, or is tekiah really something as well? So that's the first question to ask. What exactly is the role of tekiah shofar in the mitzvah structure related to shofar? So one possibility, just to give it its proper place in the list, is to take the view of Rabbeinu Tam and a few others, and say that that is the mitzvah, against the view of the Rambam and the Bahag and the Rush, and say that really tekiah is the mitzvah, that's the answer. What's the role of tekiah? That's the mitzvah of shofar. And then the question is, okay, so how is it that pretty much only one person per shul, or one person per minyan, is fulfilling the mitzvah, so then we'll have to use some logic, some principle along the lines of Shomei Ka'one, if that's the proper terminology here, or Shlichus. The same way, for example, everyone has a mitzvah to read the Megillah on Purim, but we basically have one person per minyan doing that. That operates through the mechanism of Shomei Ka'one. We don't have to actually say the words ourselves. We can listen to somebody else. So whether or not that's the appropriate terminology for shofar, it's not exactly speech, it's a sound, so is Shomei Ka'one the right term? Maybe. Maybe it's some kind of a shlichus. We're all appointing this person on behalf of the tzibur. However it operates, you'll have to say something like that, that this one individual who's blowing the shofar, he's acting on behalf of the rest of us, and we're fulfilling the mitzvah that way. So that would seem to be the first candidate for the role of tekiah, that that actually is the mitzvah. But, as we saw a minute ago, a lot of the Rishonim didn't think that was true. A lot of the Rishonim thought that the mitzvah really is shmiah. So then the question is, so why do we care about how the tekiah takes place? And we do care. The Mishnah makes it clear on Daf Chof Tes and Rosh Hashanah that we have requirements for who can blow shofar. And before we get to the fancy highfalutin requirements about the person's individual stature and the like, at a minimal level, we have a responsibility to make sure the person who's blowing shofar is what we call a mechuyev bedavar, has to be obligated in the mitzvah of shofar. So that essentially is going to exclude, as the Mishnah uses the phrase, a cheresh ot v'katan, somebody who's not obligated in any mitzvahs at all. So if you're not obligated in any mitzvahs, you're not obligated in the mitzvah of shofar. Or women as well, because it's considered to be a mitzvah saseh shahazman grama. So a positive mitzvah that's only relevant on Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, women are also pturus from the mitzvah of shofar. So whoever is going to blow the shofar for the congregation has to be outside of these categories. Has to be somebody who's obligated in the mitzvah, specifically the mitzvah of shofar. So you could ask, why should that be? Why should we care who's going to blow the shofar if there's no mitzvah in the tekiah shofar? If the mitzvah is to hear the shofar, so then let anyone blow the shofar. We shouldn't care at all whether or not they're obligated. I used to have on my old Palm Pilot, which I don't have anymore, but there was a program on the Palm Pilot called Shofar, maybe Shofar So Good, something like that. And you could push a button for a tekiah, you could push a button for a shvarim. It simulated all the sounds. So let's say if you could put that on a timer and have that go on Yontif, so why shouldn't that count also? That's also a Shmias Kol Shofar. Why shouldn't we let the computer program blow the shofar for us? Why do we care that the person who's blowing the shofar has to be somebody who's Mechuyev B'davar? So this is a question that was addressed by the Achronim extensively, and very notable among those who discussed this was the Shagas Aryeh. The Shagas Aryeh wrote that even though the mitzvah is Shmiah as he understands it, but there is a question as to what it is you have to hear. It's not just hear anything. You have to hear a kol shel mitzvah, or a kol shel chiyuv. You have to hear a sound that has a quality of mitzvah to it. And therefore, such a sound can only be generated by somebody who's actually obligated in the mitzvah. If you're not obligated in the mitzvah, you can't create such a sound. And that's what's necessary for those who are listening to fulfill their mitzvah of listening. It's interesting, there is a sefer called Yunim Bahalach. It was written by a Talmud Chacham named Shlomo Zalman Shmaya, who drew an interesting parallel that we find that when it comes to the mitzvah of sukkah, it's also a vague term, say the mitzvah of sukkah, what exactly the mitzvah of sukkah is, but when it comes to sukkah, that's coming up, so the Gemara makes it clear that sukkah is ganbach, ksheira that a sukkah, the Gemara says in sukkah and davches, a sukkah can be built really by anyone. You don't have to be obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah to construct a sukkah. So why should we say that that's any different than there? So here, you have a mitzvah to hear the shofar, and we care about who it is who's producing the sound. But when it comes to the sukkah, you have a mitzvah to sit in the sukkah, and we don't seem to care about who it is who's providing the structure, who's building the sukkah. So he suggested, Shlomo Zalman Shmaya, that the difference is that when it comes to a sukkah, so it gets built however it gets built, but once it's built, it's standing, it's there, it's going to stand on its own power. But when it comes to the tekiah shofar, So sound is ephemeral. The sound is going to leave as soon as somebody starts blowing shofar. There's no such thing as a sound that's going to last on its own. It has to be continuously produced in order for it to exist. So at any moment, the sound is still connected to the person who's generating the sound in a way that's not really true when it comes to sukkah. So if we say we have to hear a kol shel chiyuv, so it has to be that the person who's blowing the shofar has to be somebody who's obligated in order to generate that sound, in order to create that sound. There is an interesting discussion. There's a concept called chatzi eved, chatzi ben chor, a person who's half free, half a slave. It's a concept, it's really just a concept, because it doesn't exist in real life. The Gemara says that it never was allowed to exist, because it's kind of an untenable lifestyle to be half eved, half ben chorin, so they made sure to correct that. Anytime it happens, they would tell the half that was owned by somebody to set him free. And so essentially the whole concept of chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin is basically to be nafkamina man. It's basically just to exist. Sometimes you want to have a kind of obscure conceptual case. So chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin is like for the menchas chinuch. The menchas chinuch should have the chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin to throw into the discussion. Well, how would he fit into the story? Would he be obligated? Would he not be obligated? What exactly is the story vis-a-vis him? So he plays a big role, nafkamina man, he plays a big role in this mitzvah of shofar, because you find, the Gemara discusses him in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Chav Tes over there, and it's brought in the tour that you have a chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin, so he can't blow shofar for the congregation, because he is half chayiv, half not chayiv. That's why he's such a great nafkamina man, a very unusual construct, because the part of him that's a ben chorin is chayiv in mitzvos, and the part that's an eved is not chayiv in all mitzvos at least. So he has, at least vis-a-vis the mitzvah of shofar, he's half chayiv, half not chayiv, so we don't know what to do with him. So such a person, he can't blow shofar for the congregation, because half of him is not chayiv, so he's less obligated than all the men in the congregation, so he can't blow shofar on their behalf. We understand that. Okay, we can accept that. But what if he wants to blow shofar for himself? He missed it in shul, so he's laid up in the hospital somewhere, so he wants to blow shofar for himself. So apparently that doesn't work either. He's not qualified to blow shofar for himself. Even it's atzmo, he can't be motzi. He has to have somebody else, he has to have, let's say, a man, blow shofar for him. So why should that be? If we have this requirement normally that in order to fulfill mitzvahs on behalf of someone else, you have to be at least as chayiv as they are. Okay, so fine, so he's not as chayiv as all the men in the minyan. But he's as chayiv as himself, by definition. It seems to be, by every other mitzvah, you normally find that a person can be motzi himself, even if he can't be motzi everybody else, at least he's on a level to be motzi himself, pretty much by definition. So how does it work out that the chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin can't blow the shofar not only for the congregation, but even for himself? And it's interesting that in Hilchos Megillah, so the Torah doesn't make this statement. The Torah says that the chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin can't read the Megillah on behalf of the whole shul. But he doesn't say the same thing he says by shofar, that he can't read the Megillah for himself. It sounds like from the Torah over there that if he wanted to read Megillah for himself personally, that he can do. Seems to be there's a difference between Megillah and shofar. The Beis Yosef over there says, well, because he made the distinction by shofar, he doesn't feel a need to repeat it over here by Megillah to point out that little nuance. But others, Rav Tzvi Frank has a tshuva over, he asserts, no, it's an intentional difference, that when it comes to Megillah, he can read for himself, but he can't read for the shul. And when it comes to the shofar, that's different, he can't even blow the shofar for himself. So what's the difference between Megillah and shofar? So the difference seems to be, as he explains, that when it comes to the Megillah, the mitzvah of Megillah is to read the Megillah. So he can't be motzi everyone else in reading the Megillah because he's not as chayiv as they are. So it's a shamei ka'oner problem. But he can read for himself because, as we would have thought a minute ago, he's at least as chayiv as he is. He's at least as chayiv as himself, so he's able to fulfill his own mitzvah for reading the Megillah. But when it comes to shofar is an interesting kind of mitzvah. The mitzvah isn't really in the tkiyah. The mitzvah is really in the shmiyah. So he needs to hear, the half of him who's chayiv, This is a funny situation. The half of him who's chayiv needs to hear a kol shel chiyuv, needs to hear a sound that's generated by somebody who's obligated. And if he's going to blow the shofar, half of him is not obligated. He's not qualified to generate such a sound. So it's a unique mitzvah where he cannot perform it on behalf of himself because he is performing the shmia on behalf of himself, but he can't do the tekiah because he can't generate this unambiguous kol shel chiyuv that he, the part of him that's chayiv, needs to hear. So it's another reason not to be a chatziyad v'chatzim in chorah, and one of the many reasons why it's not a tenable position to be in. You can't get a job as a baal tekiah, even for yourself. You can't even hire yourself as a baal tekiah because you have this unique problem. So that's an unusual mitzvah then. Then it basically suggests that even the one who is blowing shofar is really not doing the mitzvah when he blows the shofar. Even he, like everyone else, is fulfilling the mitzvah when he hears himself blow the shofar. And that again, we have to figure out what exactly is the status of his tekiah, but his tekiah doesn't seem to be the mitzvah. Even for the one blowing the shofar himself, he's performing the mitzvah with his ears and not with his mouth. And that could be tied into the conceptual framework of shofar by Ganak in his Sefer Gan Shoshanim, quotes I think from Soloveitchik, that this is probably connected to the idea that by this point in Elul, we've probably heard many, many times, one of the top 10 Elul quotes, that the Rambam writes that when it comes to the mitzvah of shofar, so shofar, even though it's a gzeira, even though, meaning in the rabbinic sense, it's a gzeira samalach, it's a pasuk, it's a chok, so to speak, we don't really know what it's about. But the Rambam goes on to say, still, remez yeshbo, there is a theme that we could understand, there is a message, and the message is, uru yesheinim yeshein oschem, that we should wake up from our sleep, that we're in a state of slumber, and slichus doesn't really help, and the shofar is there to wake us up, the shofar is there to jolt us awake. So if that's the idea that the shofar is supposed to hit us like an alarm clock, so the whole nature of the mitzvah is that we experience it coming at us. We experience the sound hitting us. So even the one who's blowing the shofar experiences it that way. He fulfills the mitzvah through hearing the sound come at him. And therefore, again, it has to be a kol shel chiyuv. That's the way the Shagas Aryeh understood this. It's interesting that one of the rayas that the Rush brings, that the mitzvah really is in Shmia, is from a very famous mitzvah, a very famous Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, a Mishnah that has a lot of impact for some issues of modern technology, primarily the issue of a microphone and many related issues of audio technology. That the Mishnah says that if somebody who blows a shofar, hatokei l'toch habor, o l'toch hadus, if somebody blows a shofar when he's in a pit, why not? Worth trying. So he blows a shofar in a pit. So is he in fulfillment of the mitzvah of shofar? So Mishnah says it depends. If he heard the sound of the shofar, then he's yotze. But if what he heard, kolavariya shama, if he hears the sound of the echo, it sounds like the sound that comes off the wall of the pit, so then he's not yotze. And this, again, is a very influential Mishnah because this is the key text, really, that's cited in terms of questions of microphones and the like, because it sounds like what it's saying, that if you hear a sound that's identical to the normal sound, but it's not coming from the item itself or from the person's voice, but it's coming as a recreation, as an echo, it's coming as the same sound replicated through the walls of the pit, so then that's a problem. So many assume that that basically disqualifies microphones for usage in all the mitzvahs of Shmiyah, and this is one of the major texts in the discussion. It's not 100% of a slam dunk. Not everyone agreed that that was the case. Even the Chazon Ish thought that that wasn't really necessarily the best model. There is, it's a different subject, an extensive discussion to what extent the source necessarily tells us the whole story about that. There are some who understand the source differently, that the assumption usually is that the sound that you're hearing is identical to the sound of the shofar, but it's coming from somewhere else. Not everyone reads the Mishnah like that. Some assume the sound is distorted from this process, and that perhaps if the sound really was identical, maybe there wouldn't be such a problem. And others thought that maybe this is a din that's unique to shofar, where we have this specific mitzvah of Shmiyah, and that maybe other mitzvahs wouldn't necessarily be subject to the same problem. So there's a lot to debate about the whole microphone question, but it all circles around this Mishnah. This Mishnah is one of the major texts for talking about anything to do with microphones, radios, and the like in the context of fulfilling mitzvahs. So the Rush points out, the Rush didn't talk about microphones and radios, but he said that you do see something else from this Mishnah. You see that the mitzvah is Shmiya. You see that even the person blowing shofar may not fulfill the mitzvah if the sound that comes back to him is not the actual sound of the shofar itself. So that seems to emphasize that the mitzvah is the Shmiya, that even the person blowing the shofar only fulfills the mitzvah that way. And that's, again, perhaps in line with this whole idea that that's the nature of the mitzvah of shofar. It has to come from the outside. It has to hit you like an alarm clock. And that's the basic structure, how to fulfill the mitzvah. So far, if that's the case, so we've seen two possible choices for what the role of tekiah is, either the position that it is the mitzvah, which seems to be not the mainstream position, or the way the Shagasari and others said it, that it's there to generate a kol shel chiyuv, a kol shel mitzvah, so that the actual mitzvah could be performed by listening to that sound. For a third approach, you could look to the writings of Rav Shachter Shlita, where he quotes from the Rav in his Sefer Eretz HaTzvi, and he suggests that perhaps you could look at it a little bit differently. A very brisker kind of model, that perhaps even to go back to the Rush and to kind of re-litigate that issue, the question of what the bracha on the shofar should be. Should the bracha talk about shmir, or should it talk about tekiah? And the assumption that, well, okay, we understand that machlokus is what is the mitzvah, is it one or the other? You could ask a different perspective. You could look at that machlokus with a different question in mind. And maybe you could acknowledge that there is a role for tekiah and for shmir. And still, the question is, what should the bracha talk about? Because sometimes you have mitzvos which have two components. You have mitzvos which don't happen necessarily automatically. If you have a mitzvah like a lulav and esrog, so you pick up the lulav, that is the kiyum ha-mitzvah, and that's also the maisa ha-mitzvah. That is both the act and the fulfillment of the mitzvah. But sometimes you have a little bit of a divide. Sometimes you have one step and another step, that you do one thing, that's the maisa ha-mitzvah, and something else is the kiyum ha-mitzvah, is the fulfillment. So it could be that shofar, you have such a structure, that maybe, yes, the kiyum ha-mitzvah comes from hearing it, in line with what we've said so far, because that's the impact. But blowing the shofar is equally significant in terms of being a ma'aseh ha-mitzvah. It's the action that has to happen in order for the mitzvah to be fulfilled. So maybe we have two different things to focus on, the ma'aseh ha-mitzvah of the tekiah and the kiyum ha-mitzvah that comes from the shmiyah. And therefore, the machlokus among the rishonim as to what bracha to make, maybe they're asking a different question. Not the question of what is the mitzvah of shofar, but a general question which could apply to many mitzvos. When you have a mitzvah that has two parts to it, what do you make a bracha on? What are brachos generally associated with? Are they associated with a kiyum ha-mitzvah? When you fulfill a mitzvah, you make a bracha? Or are they associated with mitzvah actions which don't necessarily always line up with a kiyum ha-mitzvah? One of the prime examples of this is Sfiras HaOmer. It's always a discussion, well, is Sfiras HaOmer one mitzvah, or is it 49 separate mitzvahs? And you'll say, well, look, I have an easy proof. We make 49 brachos. It must be that it's 49 mitzvahs. So the truth is not so simple. Maybe yes, maybe no. It's 49 actions, 49 statements that we do for the mitzvah of Sfira. So maybe we make a bracha on a ma'aseh ha-mitzvah, on an action, even if it's all one kiyum, even if all those together add up to one fulfillment. So it's not always clear what is a bracha associated with it, associated with the fact that we're fulfilling a mitzvah, or the fact that you're doing an action that is part of a mitzvah. So here too, you could have the same question. Should the bracha be on the ma'isa? Should it be on the act of blowing the shofar? Or should the bracha be on the kiyum that comes from hearing the shofar? And that, as he goes on to note, that could affect a number of issues. Basically, it comes to the question of whether the shofar itself is what we would call a chefzeh shel mitzvah. Is there a mitzvah being performed by the shofar? When you blow the shofar, that is the mitzvah? Or is the mitzvah fulfilled through the sound that comes out of the shofar, and the shofar is a step removed? So that has a number of ramifications, lahalacha, as Rav Shechter notes, and as Rav Salvechik notes, quoted in other contexts. So, for example, the question of whether a shofar is asur b'hana, should a shofar have a status like a mitzvah object that can't be used for anything else? So Rav Salvechik really thought that it's not really in that status, because the mitzvah, according to the way the Rambam understands it, seems to be in the sound, not in the shofar itself. and therefore he was surprised. The Magen Avraham said differently. The Magen Avraham says that a shofar is asur behind the honor of Soloveitchik. Thought he wasn't so sure that it's not clear that a shofar is really an object of a mitzvah. The mitzvah really is in the sound. It also affects the question, for example, of whether, when it comes to, let's say, Luluv and Esrog, so we have a halacha that you have to touch the Luluv and Esrog directly, that you can't have an interruption. You can't use one of those giant cloth things to lift up a Luluv and Esrog, probably, because that's a chatzitza, there's an interruption in between your hand and the Luluv. So do you have such a halacha by the shofar? Let's say you're going to pick up the shofar, and instead of actually touching it to your lips, you'll hold it an inch away, and you're able to still make the right sounds come out. So do you have to actually touch the shofar? So it may depend on this question. Is the shofar a chefetz shel mitzvah or not? The Ramban, in his commentary to the Rif, the Ramban writes that when the Mishnah says that it's possible if you have a shofar that's covered with gold, it's a question, why should that impact the mitzvah of the shofar? Some understand that it messes up the sound that way. So the Ramban writes that the issue is that there's now a chatzitza between the person's lips and the shofar. That messes up the mitzvah. So whoever said there's an issue of chatzitza, how do you know that you have to touch the shofar directly? So you could have argued differently, as Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, that perhaps, again, the shofar is not the object of the mitzvah, so therefore that's not necessarily subject to this rule of chatzitza, and that apparently is a subject of debate. And this is relevant very much to another major issue, another major debate that the Rambam had with other Rishonim. The Rambam and the Hagos Tashri argued on the following point. And this statement of the Rambam, as we'll see in a second, is relevant to other contemporary issues, like the microphone issue we mentioned a few minutes ago. So this Rambam is possibly very important to a different contemporary issue. The Rambam says that we know we have a halacha of mitzvah habavi avera. So if somebody commits an avera in the process of doing a mitzvah, so the mitzvah is not going to count, which is famously in the Mishnah associated more with sukkahs. We have a whole parak, lulav hagazel, if you're going to steal a lulav, so that's not going to be a valid way to perform the mitzvah. So what if you would steal a shofar? So first off, let me say, don't try this at home. It's bad advice. This is not the proper way to do anything. But, let's say, technically speaking, one did steal a shofar, would that work for the mitzvah of shofar, or would it be disqualified in the same way that you have the mitzvah of lulav being disqualified? So the Rambam actually writes, again, not that he's advocating stealing, but technically speaking, as far as the rules of mitzvah habavi avera are concerned, if you would steal a shofar, that would not actually be a disqualification through the rules of mitzvah habavi avera. Why? Because the way he explains it is that the mitzvah is not in the shofar. The mitzvah is in the sound. And therefore, the shofar is not the cheftza shel mitzvah. The shofar is not itself the mitzvah item. The mitzvah item is the ephemeral sound coming out of the shofar. And there, as the Rambam writes, a key line which may be relevant in other discussions, ein bekol din gezel. You can't have a concept of gezel when it comes to sound. This is not something that you could steal. So is that relevant to downloading music and the like and all those kinds of issues? Possibly. It is invoked in those discussions. It sounds a little bit like a joke, but the question is, you have something which is ephemeral, like a sound. Is that an object that can be stolen? Do we have to find different terminology? Probably. It's a whole other discussion, but that also draws on this text. So it's another hot, controversial topic, which somehow draws on the shofar literature. So...
Mm-hmm. Ticket first, and you walk in,
you
have to pay.
Right.
You hear that
called shofar. Yeah. So you stole the entry into the shul, but the sound itself you didn't steal. The sound itself is not subject to being stolen. That's what he writes. It's not something that gives itself over to the concept of being stolen. It's too ephemeral. You stole entry into the shul, so maybe your davening doesn't count. But the shofar itself, which maybe you could have heard from outside, but the shofar itself, that's what he writes. Again, it's not recommended. It's not not that it's not an avera at all, and that's also relevant to the whole discussion of other topics. But as far as mitzvah habavi avera, it has to attach itself to an object, which is an interesting point. Just to expand on that for a second, and first to note that not everyone agreed with the Rambam. The Hagos HaShri on the Rush, the last Hagos HaShri in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, at the very end, he says the opposite. He says that if one steals a shofar, so then the mitzvah is disqualified through the principle of mitzvah habavi avera. So it could be relevant a little bit to understand the whole structure of how mitzvah habavi avera works. There is a comment in the Menches Chinuch The Tosus, the Masechta Sukkah, in the first part of Sukkah on Daf Tes, raises the question that the Gemara over there says in Daf Tes and Sukkah that a stolen Sukkah is pasul. And the Gemara brings the pasuk to tell you that a Sukkah has to be of the non-stolen variety. So Tosus asks, why do I need a pasuk for this point? We already know, we have a principle of mitzvah habavi aveira. It tells us that any stolen mitzvah object is not going to be acceptable. So why do I need a separate pasuk telling me that a stolen sukkah is no good? So Tosfos says, well, it must be mitzvah habavi aveira is the principle midrabanan, and the pasuk is coming to tell us it's a din min haTorah. The Menachas Chinuch has a much more elaborate explanation, where he says as follows, basically to kind of briskify it, to put it in brisker terminology, what he basically says is as follows. He says, let's say we know when it comes to the mitzvah of sukkah, it's got a little bit of an unusual structure, no pun intended, that you have basically a positive mitzvah which comes across like an aveira, that if you eat outside of the sukkah, we treat that as a bittul mitzvah saseh, that that's something that is criticized. So it's basically presents itself like an aveira, not to eat outside of the sukkah. So let's say if somebody were to eat in the sukkah, he fulfills a mitzvah. If he were to eat in his living room on sukkahs, so then that's a bittul mitzvah saseh. He's actively negating a mitzvah. And if he doesn't eat at all, so then he is not doing anything wrong. He's not fulfilling a mitzvah either. So let's say somebody were to eat in a stolen sukkah. So what impact would that have? So says the Menachas Chinuch, if we're using the principle of mitzvah habavi aveira, what does that mean? It means that you can't score points in heaven through an aveira. You do a mitzvah that involves an aveira, you're not going to have any schar, you're not going to have any kiyum for that. So if somebody were to eat in a stolen sukkah, says the Menachas Chinuch, if the only operative factor was mitzvah habavi aveira, so that would negate his mitzvah fulfillments, he wouldn't score any points. But would it be like he's eating in his living room? No, he's eating in a sukkah. He's just not fulfilling any mitzvah. He's not getting any credit for it because it's a mitzvah habavi aveira. But it's not like eating in your living room. So comes the Gemara and Daf Tes and the Pasuk and says, no, a stolen sukkah is mamish nothing. It's not a sukkah at all. And therefore, that's like eating in your living room. It's no better than that. That's a bittul mitzvah saseh. So what the Menachas Chinuch is basically saying is that the way a mitzvah habavi aveira works is that it attacks your kiyum ha-mitzvah. You can't be makayim a mitzvah if it's an aveira. But the elements of the mitzvah are still there. They're just not doing anything for you. They're just not giving you any points. You're not going to fulfill a mitzvah, so you need an extra chiddush to say that a stolen sukkah doesn't even have the elements. It's nothing. So here, if we want to apply the concept of mitzvah habavi aveira to shofar, so what we see is that it seems to be mitzvah habavi aveira diffuses the kiyum ha-mitzvah, negates the fulfillment of the mitzvah. So the question is, where is the kiyum? So this seems to be the structure here, that the maisa is the blowing of the shofar, but the kiyum is the hearing of the shofar. So that's what the Rambam says, that the kiyum is where you would be vulnerable to mitzvah habavi aveira, but the kiyum is with something that's ephemeral, that can't be stolen, ein b'kol din gezel, and therefore conceptually it just doesn't apply to the mitzvah of shofar, and others disagree. But it goes again to this question of where is the mitzvah taking place. And again, not to recommend stealing shofars, it's going to be a bad idea no matter what. It's the question of whether it's technically subject to this principle of mitzvah habavi aveira in the traditional sense. So that gives us three versions so far. The mitzvah is tekiah, the mitzvah is shmiah, but you have to have a kol shel chiyuv, or tekiah is the maisa ha-mitzvah, and shmiah is the kiyum ha-mitzvah. There's a similar explanation, but comes from a different strand of learning, so we'll mention it separately. The Sochach of a Rebbe, the Abnei Nezer, who was a great Gaon. So he has an explanation very similar to this one, but using his tradition, the Sochach of a tradition, he comes at it a little bit of a different way. And he suggests as following. He suggests as follows, that maybe when it comes to shofar, yes, the mitzvah really is about shmiah. That's where the concept really makes sense. That's what the whole point is. So therefore, the mitzvah of shofar really comes from shmiah's shofar. However, he says there is a basic principle that every mitzvah you do has to have something active. You can't passively fulfill a mitzvah just sitting in your chair and not doing anything. And he gives an example. So we read just now Parshas Vayelech. The last mitzvah in the Torah, according to the count of the Sefer HaChinuch, is the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah, which seems to be for the purpose of owning a Sefer Torah. It seems to be the mitzvah is that one should own a Sefer Torah. So it emerges from the Mishnayos that you don't have to necessarily create your own Sefer Torah to be in fulfillment of this mitzvah. If you purchase a Sefer Torah, so you're also in fulfillment. You could buy a Sefer Torah, you're also mekayim the mitzvah. So the problem is, buying works, but apparently inheriting a Sefer Torah, that doesn't work. And that's hard to understand, because in terms of the halachos of kinyanim, the halachos of ownership, somebody who buys something and somebody who inherits something, they both own it in the exact same way. So if the mitzvah really is about owning a Sefer Torah, so then why should we differentiate if you're going to buy it or if you're going to inherit it? It's the same thing. You end up owning the Sefer Torah in exactly the same fashion. So why should there be a difference? So there the Menchas Chinuch suggests that we have this principle that mitzvos always have to have an action associated with them. So if you're going to buy the Sefer Torah, so then we have the whole package. You own the Sefer Torah, that's the whole point. And you did a maisa, you went and you bought it. But if you inherit the Sefer Torah, you only have half the story. You own the Sefer Torah, but you didn't do any maisa in order to inherit. Now again, that's another thing. Don't try at home. You certainly should not do a maisa in order to inherit. That would definitely be a mitzvah habavi aver. But assuming that you didn't do any maisa, so then that's a passive act, so that's not enough. You have to do something. So that's what the Avnei Nezer says, that's the idea here as well, that yeah, the mitzvah really is Shmiya Shofar, that's what it's all about, but there has to be a token maisa, there has to be a physical action that's done. It could be done through shlichus, apparently. You could have one person doing it on behalf of the whole Sibur, that's the one blowing the shofar, he's the only one doing the maisa. But for it to be a purely passive experience where a sound comes out of heaven and everyone just sits and listens and nobody's doing anything, that would not be a possible structure for a mitzvah. It has to be somebody has to do something, even if it's one person per minion, but it has to be at least somebody doing something actually physical to count as the mitzvah. I think it's more similar to the Rav Schechter and the Rav's point about the Maisa and the Kiyum. It's just using a little bit different terminology and different ways of getting there. I think I would group it more with that one. It's really it's a very slight twist on that previous explanation. But he says, based on that, he thinks that that's the reason why there is a practice that before we blow shofar, so when the bracha is being recited on the shofar, so the talis covers up the shofar during the time of the bracha, and only after the bracha is finished, so then they take the talis off, and then they blow the shofar. So why do you do such a thing? Why do you cover the shofar with the talis? So he suggests that this is very similar to one of my favorite subjects to talk about. Friday night, when we make kiddush, so we have a practice to cover up the challis. And why do we have such a practice? So I know the Yerushalmi quotes a couple of reasons, and the most labedic reason, favorite reason, is that we're afraid we don't want to embarrass the challis. Because really, you could have made kiddush on the challah too. The din is you can make kiddush either on the challah or on the wine. We prefer to make kiddush on the wine. So we cover up the challah. It shouldn't see what's going on. It should notice that we're making kiddush on the wine and passing it over, choosing not to make the bracha on the challah. So he says it's really the same thing here, that really you have two candidates for the bracha. That the tekiah, that's a mitzvah, so you could have made the bracha on the tekiah, which, as we saw before, involves the shofar. Or the shmiah is the sound, that also is a good candidate for the bracha. And we'd prefer to make the bracha on Shmiah because that's what's really relevant. The mitzvah is really focused around Shmiah. So if we're going to choose a bracha, we'd rather make the bracha about Shmiah. But that involves passing over the shofar, passing over the tekiah bracha, so we don't want it to see what's going on, so we cover up the shofar during the time of the bracha in order to have this similar concept to be covering up the challahs when we make Kiddush Friday night. So that was what the Avnei Nezer suggested. The Avnei Nezer was one of the great Chassidish Poskim in history, the Sachet Shavu Rebbe. Another one of the great Chassidish Poskim was the Minchas Elazar, the Munkach Rebbe. He didn't like this tshuva at all. He thought that was totally incorrect. He said that there are different reasons why you cover up the shofar. And he said if the Avnei Nezer was right, you shouldn't cover up the shofar. You should cover up the shofar blower. He says the whole thing he doesn't think makes sense. So he has pretty harsh words for this tshuva. He doesn't think this is true. So there are two of the great Chassidish Poskim of 100 years ago, the Minchas Elazar and the Avnei Nezer. They argued very strongly on this topic, but that was the way the Avnei Nezer suggested that perhaps you have the structure that really there is a mitzvah only in the Shmiya, but that would be passive, so we need a token maisa to go with it, so that's what Tekiah Shofar is. There is a simpler way to say those two things, and that's an approach you also find in the Ksav Sofer and also in the appropriately named Sefer Yom Truah. Yom Teruah, there's a sefer, Maram ibn Chaviv wrote a sefer that has a little section on Rosh Hashanah and a little section, one parak of each Masech, a little bit on Rosh Hashanah, a little bit on Yom Kippur, a little bit on Sukkah. The sefer is called Shemos Ha'aretz, something like that, but each section has a name. The Kapos Tamarim on Sukkah, and the Tosafos Yom HaKippurim, and the Yom Teruah. And the Yom Teruah, he says, like this also, a very simple mahalach, that perhaps it's a 50-50 split. We have two mitzvos in the mitzvah of shofar. That's why I said, even if we were to label this year the mitzvah of shofar, it wouldn't be clear that that would be an appropriate title, because maybe it's mitzvos, maybe there's more than one. So maybe it's tekiah and shemiah, and maybe they have an equal role. So okay, so we have a question what the bracha is, but if we want to know what the mitzvah of tekiah is, that's the answer, that maybe tekiah is just an equal partner in the process. We could make one final suggestion, that maybe the structure is to anticipate Sukkos a little bit. So there is a chiddush that the Netziv, the Rashiv of Elazin, has in his commentary to the She'iltos to Rav Achai Gaon, where he asserts a certain principle in discussing the mitzvah of Sukkah. He says that we know that we have a concept in the Torah, so we have a concept of mitzvos, we have obligatory actions, and then we also have a hechsher mitzvah. Hechsher mitzvah is something that we do in preparation for a mitzvah, but usually it's different than the mitzvah itself. The mitzvah that we're actually fulfilling a religious obligation, that's the mitzvah by itself. A hechsher mitzvah is something necessary, or maybe not even necessary, something in preparation is not a mitzvah. Do you ever find that a hechsher mitzvah is counted as a mitzvah also has some kind of mitzvah significance? So the Netziv says, he thinks, yes, this is in Kuf Samach Tes in the She'iltos, that perhaps when you have a mitzvah that's a preparation, you have a hechsher mitzvah that's mentioned in Chumash, a hechsher mitzvah haksuva b'kra, so then that takes on kind of a quasi-mitzvah status. And he says that would have some nafkaminas, that perhaps we'd say mitzvah bo yosumi b'shlucho, that it's still better if you do it yourself. A normal hechsher mitzvah maybe not, but a hechsher mitzvah haksuva b'kra, you have a little mila to do it yourself. And the example he gives is the aforementioned concept of sukkah. So you have a sukkah, so it's not really clear from the Torah there's any mitzvah to build a sukkah. It seems that the mitzvah of sukkah is to eat in the sukkah. We mentioned before that a sukkah can be built by anyone. It doesn't have a status of chiyuv in order to build the sukkah. So is building a sukkah a mitzvah? So he suggests it's a hechsher mitzvah k'suva b'kra, so it has mitzvah involvement, it has certain nafkaminas that associate it with a mitzvah, but it's not a full-blown mitzvah. But one possible nafkamina, he writes, is that you can make a bracha. We don't have a practice of making a bracha on the mitzvah of building a sukkah, but there is a Yerushalmi like that, that you could theoretically make a bracha on building a sukkah. So one could suggest that that's the relevant structure here as well, that maybe when it comes to shofar, the Shmiya is the mitzvah, so what role does that leave for tekiah? It leaves the role of a hechsher mitzvah, haksuva b'kra, an action that may not be a full-blown, no pun intended, may not be a full-fledged mitzvah, but it's a hechsher mitzvah, it's a definite step on the way to a mitzvah, and it's a necessary step, you can't have a shofar without it, so that also gives a hechsher mitzvah a step up. And it's written in Chumash, to whatever extent shofar is written in Chumash, a little bit of an interesting derivation, but Yom Teruah, it's what the Torah says, so it's identified in the Chumash, so it has this elevated status of a hechsher mitzvah, k'suva b'kra, and that gives it an important seat at the table, even if it's not the actual mitzvah itself. So the lesson is, we should still have proper respect for the Baal Tokei. You shouldn't think that he's on a lower level than or equal level to everyone else. He's still doing something at least akin to a mitzvah, and that has its own chashuv status as well. So let's just quickly chazer what we spoke about. We spoke about the question of what's the proper way of describing shofar, the mitzvah of tekiah shofar, shmiah shofar, the mitzvahs of shofar. And that the discussion starts with the Rush, who brings the machlokas rishonim what the bracha should make. Should the bracha be on shmiah or on tekiah? And as he suggests, the machlokas as to what the mitzvah is. So then the question is, what about the tekiah, which is done by a person who works hard to practice and to be ready and to be on stage the whole time? So what's his role? Is this a mitzvah or not? So one way to say is like the rishonim who say that is the mitzvah. Okay, so maybe tekiah is the mitzvah, but the majority of you is not that way, that the shmiah is the mitzvah. So we saw five other ways to look at his position. Either we could say that he has to create a kol shel chiyuv, like the Shagas Aryeh said, the mitzvah is still the shmiah, but it has to be a specific type of shmiah. We mentioned the contrast between that and sukkah. that a sukkah can be built by anyone, because it stands on its own after it's built, the way Shlomo Zalman Shmaya explained. But a shofar sound is going to leave once it stops blowing, so it has to be generated by somebody chayiv. And we went into the whole distinction with the Chatzi Ever, Chatzi Ben Chorin, who not only cannot blow shofar in the for the congregation, but also not even for himself, because he has to hear a kol shel chiyuv, and he's not able to generate that because he's not really mechuyev bedavar. And that all of this seems to revolve around the principle, conceptually, that the mitzvah of shofar is that it's supposed to be like an alarm clock, and therefore it kind of hits you from the outside, even though the one who's blowing it is also going to fulfill the mitzvah that way, as if it's coming from the outside like an alarm clock. And that's what the Rush brings a raya from the Mishnah, which is very relevant in the discussion about microphones and audio technology in general. The question of when the Mishnah says that if you're blowing a shofar in a pit, you hear the sound of the echo, you're not yotzei. We'll question what exactly that means. But whatever it means in terms of technology, it shows us that even the one blowing the shofar has to hear the sound of the shofar himself in order to be yotze. So then we discussed another possible model, that maybe we have a maisa hamitzvah and a kiyum hamitzvah here, and therefore even the machlokas about what bracha doesn't necessarily tell us what the mitzvah is, but just as a machlokas about what you make brachos on, do you make a bracha on a maisa or a kiyum, and that affects the whole question of whether a shofar is a cheftza shal mitzvah or not, which could have an impact for issues like, is a shofar asr bahana, like the Magen Avraham thought, and if the Rav Soloveitchik thought differently, is there a halacha to touch the shofar directly without a chatzitza, against the Ramban, who said that gold is considered a chatzitza, and that's why it's a problem, and the question of mitzvah haba b'yaveira, which we see from the Menches Chinuch's whole explanation by Sukkah, mitzvah haba b'yaveira negates a kiyum ha-mitzvah, but doesn't do anything to the essential elements of the mitzvah, so that's the issue when it comes to Sukkah. So too, when it comes to shofar, is shofar susceptible to mitzvah habavi avera? Where would it be susceptible? So it was machlokas the Hagos Hashri, who said there is such a psul for a stolen shofar, against the Rambam, because the Rambam's understanding seems to be that the arena that would be vulnerable to mitzvah habavi avera is the kiyum hamitzvah, and that's in the sound, and sound is not something you can steal in the kol din gezel. Again, that may have other modern nafkaminas as well. And we mentioned the Sachachava Rebbe's similar but slightly different approach, that really the mitzvah is all about Shmiah. But like we see by Sefer Torah, you can't have a mitzvah that is purely passive. You always have to do something in order to have a mitzvah, and shofar otherwise could be you just sit in shul and you hear it and don't do anything. So therefore we need a token maisa, but it is less important than hearing the shofar. Conceptually, it's all about hearing the shofar. So therefore, we prefer to make the bracha on the shmiah rather than on the tekiah. And that's why he says we cover up the shofar during the bracha, because we could have made the bracha on the shofar, on the tekiah. Instead, we pass it over for the shmiah, so we don't want it to see, just like we cover up the challah, we make kiddush on a wine instead. And we mentioned the Menachas Elazar didn't like that shuv at all, and he thought there were different reasons. And we mentioned a pretty straightforward possibility that maybe it's simply a 50-50 partnership. Shmi and Tekiah are both parts of the mitzvah. And then we mentioned one final suggestion, that the Netziv has this chiddush, that if you have a hechsher mitzvah, haksuva b'kra, you have a mitzvah that is not really a mitzvah itself, it's really a preparation for a mitzvah, but it's mentioned in Chumash, that gets kind of a quasi-mitzvah status, a hechsher mitzvah, haksuva b'kra, and perhaps that's the appropriate model for a shofar. So again, all of this really highlights the fact that shofar is a complex experience, but that the Shmiah does, in one way or another, seem to be the point of focus, seems to be what we're paying attention to, and it really illustrates this idea that the shofar, as the Rambam puts it, is supposed to serve as an alarm clock, is supposed to hit us even those of us who are blowing shofar. The shofar experience comes at us from the outside, comes at us to provoke a reaction, to say, Uri Yishinim Meshonaschem, and it should be our bracha that we should be able to respond appropriately to that call, that clarion call, as they just call it, and that we should wake up, and that we should have a year of intent and purpose and focus, and a year of bracha and mazel and all good things. Thank you very much. Shkach. Shkach.